Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take a look at the changing of the nodes, which is coming up this month of December. The nodes are about to change signs into Taurus and Scorpio, and so we're just going to do a little preview of that today, and I think we'll probably do, closer to the date, we'll do another one where we take the nodes of the moon and rotate them through all of the houses, give you a little preview of what that might look like in your birth chart. Today, I just want to talk about the Scorpio-Taurus axis and the nodes of the moon generally, and just give everybody a little bit of a preview of what this next round of eclipses in the sign of the bull and the scorpion might look like. So before we do that, I am really happy to announce that the Kickstarter's been at a really good pace lately. We're at 438 backers today with 31 days left to go. I'm going to share it on the screen with you guys in a second. So I'm hoping that in the next couple of days, we can break the 500 backer total, which will put us over a third of the way there with 30-ish days to go. So thank you all for your support. Thank you for supporting this channel. There's a number of ways you can support the channel. You can click like on the videos. You can subscribe. You can click the notification bell so you get notifications when I go live. You can share videos, tell people about my channel. Send prayers that this channel be a good place of spiritual nutrition for people. But also, obviously, my Kickstarter comes around. If you're able to donate and support this channel, it's deeply appreciated. You can check out when you go to the Kickstarter, which is the link to the Kickstarter is in the comments section of this video. It is also in the description of this video. And when you go, you can donate and pick up my Astrology of 2022 video, for example, which is a deep dive lecture I'm not releasing on my YouTube channel. It's all about the major astrology of 2022. There's a bunch of other exclusive videos and talks that I give. I don't release anywhere else. There's a year ahead horoscope reading for your sign that takes you through the whole year for your sun or rising sign. There are, let's see, how many left? There are 9 mini readings left. Those are personalized. I take a look at the biggest, single biggest transit for you in the year ahead in your birth chart. There's a horary offering that I have. And also, if you want to take one of my online courses in 2022 or beyond, you can use them as a credit for any year beyond. Once it's 2022, you can use them anytime you want. And you can also bundle them together to save. So this is over 50% or 50% off from my my normal rates for my program. And it is also about $400 cheaper than the early bird payment. So it's my best deal of the year. If you want to take my online course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, it begins in June and also in November of 2022. And you can bundle them together and get my year 1 and 2 program, or year 1, 2 and horary, or year 1, 2 horary and readings and passages. So I have 4 years worth of curriculum that I teach to my students. Some people just want to go through the whole thing and suffer with me through 4 years, but no, I'm just kidding. It's a great series of programs. These are my babies. I mean, this is what I have put, you know, so much time and effort into building these. We have a great staff that's there to support you. So, you know, you can donate and get a really good deal on studying astrology with me. All right. So thank you so much for your donations. Really appreciate it. Hopefully we can push toward that 500 backer mark. We're trying to get to 1,367, just one more than last year. Of course, if we can go way beyond that, that would be awesome. But we're making good pace. We're getting closer to that 500 backer total, which puts us well over a third of the way there with like 30 days left. So we're in good shape so far, but please, for those of you who have given, thank you so much. And if you haven't, please consider pitching in and supporting this channel. All right. So I want to talk about the nodes of the moon today. And first of all, it's important to talk about the Hellenistic view of the nodes of the moon versus the modern evolutionary view of the nodes of the moon. You know, more power to everyone who's into evolutionary astrology. The views are just different. So let me just briefly describe what people are used to knowing about the nodes of the moon or hearing about them, and then we'll contrast that with the ancient or traditional view in the West and the East. Very briefly, and I have a full, actually have a full-length lecture available through my Kickstarter on this very topic. So if you want a real deep dive into the history of the nodes and stuff like that, you can pick that up through the Kickstarter. Okay, so in modern astrology, the general formula goes like this. North node is your spiritual mission, the stuff you're supposed to go and cultivate, your spiritual homework. And if you do these things, well, or if you even try to do them well, you'll succeed and evolve and sort of level up spiritually. Whereas on the other hand, the south node of the moon is maybe at its most generous, the stuff that you have stored up as from past lives, lessons and maybe gifts or skills from past lives. But generally speaking, it is looked at as your karmic baggage, the stuff that you're going to tend to get stuck in over and over and that has to be like released. And that's, in a nutshell, that is modern evolutionary astrology's view on the nodes of the moon. So ancient astrology takes a different view. Modern evolutionary astrology, this viewpoint about the nodes was cultivated in the past 100 years. It's brand new. It does not have, it's not the historical, ancient or traditional view, which is fine. People, people innovate and people come up with new ways of reading symbols all the time. And I think that that's fine. Certainly like when I began in as an astrologer, I was really actually really into evolutionary astrology and read in the way of read charts in the way of the nodes that I just described for a long time. So, you know, it would be hypocritical of me to say that I've never seen any good come out of that or that it's somehow just totally wrong or something like that. It's a different viewpoint. It's no longer the one that I use in my practice. I found one that, you know, the traditional view is just more satisfying to me. So this is the one that I use. So that's the way I teach it on my channel as well. So that being said, what is the ancient view of the nodes? Well, pretty simple. The ascending node represents the point at which the moon is crossing the ecliptic path of the sun, heading toward the pole star, upward, northward. When the descending node, the south node, represents the moon's path as it crosses the ecliptic, heading southward toward the earth, toward the southern horizon. The ascending node, remember that this is the node of the moon, and in ancient astrology, the moon is the general ruler of fortune. It is the ruler of the sublunary realm, the realm that we live in that is defined by the constant fluctuation. Things get hot and then they get cold. Fortune goes up and fortune goes down. There's good and there's evil. There's dark and there's light. So the fluctuation of dualities constantly in the wheel of fortune is depicted by the moon. Now remember that the moon in the sublunary world and the constant impermanence, flux, and change is contrasted by the light of eternity and the sun and nous and higher mind, the noetic light of the mind, which as philosophers, sages, spiritualists, seekers, we are trying to cultivate because that same light of the higher mind is the light of the true self. And so astrology is meant to help us see the eternal, the forms, the archetypes, God, the thoughts of God, depending on which school of philosophy you're talking about. It's meant to help us see that eternal light within all of the fluctuations and changes in the sublunary world, just like the prisoner in the cave is in Plato's allegory is learning to gradually recognize shadows from the real forms that are the real light or the real forms. So it's not that we look at this world and say, oh, what a fake, phony place. But we say, well, if you get caught up in the roller coaster of ups and downs and the constant rotation of dualities, and you don't learn how to see eternity in its midst, you'll get lost. You'll be like the prisoner chained to the wall, thinking that only shadows are real. Okay, so we are eternalists. We're looking for eternity in the midst of dualities and time and our everyday life. If we don't have that perspective, whether you're a Buddhist, a yogi, an ancient Western hermeticist, the general idea is that you'll be immersed in suffering because you're immersed in only part of what is real. And so you're immersed in illusion if you believe that only part of the whole is real. So that's an illusion. There's a lot more that's real. So that's in a nutshell why we have to be very careful with the nodes of the moon and why in ancient astrology, there was a sense of ambivalence around them at times. For example, the north node of the moon, generally speaking, the ascending node represents the rise of fortune. Well, the rise of fortune contextually could mean good or bad. It depends on the context. So you'll see ancient authors saying that good ones, meaning benefics, are good with the north node and malefics are bad with the north node because the north node just points to increase gain or the general upward tilt of fortune. But in the material world, that's relative, right? You don't, as I always say, you don't want a tumor to grow. You want it to shrink or go away. You want the cancer cells in your body to diminish with chemo. You don't want them to keep spreading. So anything that has to do with gain, generally speaking, increase, generally speaking, was associated with the north node of the moon. And hence, depending on its context in the chart, you will see it's there for good or bad. For example, in Lance Armstrong's chart, Mars is with Rahu, or the north node of the moon. He gets bigger and stronger through steroids and wins and is a champion, but he does it through steroids. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's always good. The north node of the moon can mean gain or increase, or growth or promotion or success or achievement and ambition and hunger and thirst for things. But it's relative whether that is good or bad in this material world, because everything in this material world tends to be relative, moving as it is through the constant cycling of opposites. In Indian astrology, you'll hear Rahu, or the north node of the moon, talked about very similarly. Rahu represents the potential for success, worldly gain, ambition, desire, but also the potential for all of the ruthlessness, opportunism, and greed and kind of power hunger that could come along with it. So Rahu, from the Indian perspective, can be very good materially, but also ultimately bad for you spiritually, because it's a shadow planet in Vedic astrology, but in the West, of course, it's just a point. But either way, the north node of the moon can point to things growing, becoming stronger, more successful, looking more Jupiter-like. But ultimately, gain does not always serve the spirit in this world. Desire and the realization of our desires do not always serve us in this world. And so the ultimate thing to recognize, if you're looking at it from the Indian perspective, is that any kind of desire in this world that would be associated with Rahu or the north node may temporarily satisfy us, but ultimately it tends to be a negative spiritually. You'll see more of Rahu described as something that could point to material ambitions and material gains, but oftentimes with the delusion of a hungry ghost around it. Rahu is a demon whose head was severed while trying to steal the nectar of immortality, gets the nectar stuck in his throat. And so he's unable to assimilate that which he hungers for selfishly. He also tried to steal the nectar of immortality, and then gets his head chopped off by Mohini Murti, avatar of Vishnu, cuts off his head with the Sudarshan chakra, the weapon of time. And he's forced to roam eternally hungry for something that can't ever really quench his thirst. There's a metaphor for Rahu, for the north node. Okay, so ancient Indian astrologers are not glorifying the north node as your karmic homework that you need to go and do and satisfy. And no, it's an unsatisfiable hunger that can't really be quenched. That doesn't mean that we can't learn from the pursuit of our desires. Our desires in this world are incredibly instructive. That's why Maya means not only illusion, but mercy. There's a way in which if you pursue your desires, they educate you. They teach you things. I wouldn't deny that or take that away from the idea that, if you pursue the desires of your north node, you'll learn and grow, but not necessarily because of what you get from them, but more so because of what they can't give you, because of the fact that, like all fruitless shadow impulses in this world, they don't lead you in the place that you hope that they will. All right. But at any rate, which is obviously our spiritual center. We're ultimately looking for home. Spiritually speaking, we're looking for the divine. We're looking for the soul. We're looking for heart and soul, you could say. And there is no amount of realizing or tasting the desires of the north node or Rahu that will deliver that. Still, the pursuit of those desires is a natural part of our karmic inclination and can be educational. But it's important to understand that Rahu and the north node of the moon tend to point toward gains and growth and things becoming successful materially, but oftentimes not delivering spiritually, or potentially getting us more deeply entangled in karma as a result. So that's a little crash course in the north node of the moon. Now, the south node of the moon, Ketu, the descending node, when you see the moon crossing the ecliptic going downward toward the earth, has the meaning of descent, decline. It's a little bit more Saturn-like in the sense that it implies material loss or diminishment or hardships. It's more about the relinquishment of material things, the disappointment, or the loss of certain kinds of things. So for example, again, ancient astrologers said, when you put a good one with the south node of the moon, it diminishes its goodness. So let's say you have Venus in your second house, but you know, K2 or the south node of the moon is there with it. Well, you know, the good results of money that Venus might give are going to be diminished somehow. On the other hand, this sense of diminishment, if you put it with a malefic, can diminish or curb the malefic qualities. Isn't that interesting? So good with a bad one and bad with a good one, the south node is said to be. So it's relative. And generally speaking, decline or diminishment in the Vedic tradition, when you look at K2, is more spiritually beneficial, while more worldly has more, there's more costly quality, more of a sense of material loss, but spiritual gain. So Rahu is like material gain, spiritual diminishment, whereas the south node K2 tends to be about material loss and spiritual gain. But it's not necessarily that simple. You could also say that Rahu is a bit like trying to find your way. Like, let's say there's two ways that people have, I've used this example before, of dealing with food. Someone says, just give me as much as I can have. I don't care. I'm going to eat it. Kind of like Rahu. K2 says, I'm going to fast. I'm not going to eat it because I don't want to suffer. So K2 can be kind of escapist. It can say, I don't want material things. And it can try to escape this world altogether by focusing on spiritual things or anything that could represent an escape from the passions and the work and exhaustion of the world and all of the relentlessness of our desires. Oh, just let me just shoot up. You know what I mean? Like, forget, you know, the material impulse to be successful or to earn money or to be masterful or to have achievement or to get things, or, oh, I just can't do any of it. Please hand me a bottle, you know? So sometimes K2 is going to represent a kind of escapism from the suffering and impermanence of the world. But at other times, it's going to represent losses materially that push us in the direction of spirituality a little bit more, because losses generally tend to do so, which is why sometimes the south node of the moon is considered more benefic spiritually, because loss or diminishment or decline or material troubles oftentimes are very, very much instructing us or pointing us toward the need for a spiritual practice or a spiritual focus in life. So at any rate, but the point is that they're relative. They were both considered malefic in ancient Indian astrology, and they had this very relative contextual meaning in ancient Western astrology. When you think about that now and translate it into the meaning of the nodes changing signs right now into Taurus and Scorpio, remember that we are going to have the south node in Scorpio and the north node in Taurus. It's very important. If you go back, the last time that the nodes of the moon were in Scorpio and Taurus, the north node in Scorpio, the south node in Taurus, was from about September 2012 to March of 2014. So I highly recommend going back and doing some journaling. What was going on in your life during that time? If you know the house locations of Taurus and Scorpio in your chart, you can add that in. We'll be taking a look at that later in the month. If not, then, you know, just generally, what were some of the major themes internally, psychologically? What were the things you were kind of lusting after, desiring, wanting, going after materially? What were the things that were failing or hurting or falling apart? If you go back, Scorpio and Taurus eclipses between May 2003 to November of 2004, and that was the south node in Scorpio, north node in Taurus, as it is about to be again right now. So for example, let me just give you an example of mine. I'm going to go back to my return in 2003 and four. In 2003 and four, the north node was in Taurus in my first house, and the south node was in Scorpio in my seventh. It was at that time that I got my first job after college as a youth pastor. I wrote about this in my memoir, which was published back in 2010. This part was kind of a vivid part of my book because it was when addiction started for me. So I went through a period of, let's just call it, you know, north node in Taurus in the first house. Very, very basic, right? It's a place of character, body, calling. And I was doing everything I could to fulfill the ideal of Taurus. It's the exaltation of the moon. It's the domicile of Venus. I was trying to come into my own, be an independent earner, be secure materially, be responsible, be self-possessed, and develop good qualities, appear to the world like a mature, stable, likable person. It was a big moment for me coming out of college and my first job on my own and really trying to come into my own and fulfill that Taurean sense of confidence, success, you know, likability, material stability, all of those kinds of things that can go along with Taurus. Meanwhile, I was going through devastating breakup after devastating breakup in my romantic life. South Node is in Scorpio in the seventh house, right? And also trying to, on the side, the pressure of trying to be this responsible, mature adult. Like I'm leaving childhood behind. Now I'm an adult. I've got a job. I'm a youth pastor. I have all this responsibility and trying to fulfill that Taurean self-image, right? In the meantime, I was going through periods of either having my heart crushed or being promiscuous or potentially going out with girls who were doing drugs and doing drugs with them on the side. So I was living this total double life and it was just excruciatingly painful. And so the impulses were pulling in two different directions. And what I came to realize over time was not, you just need to be responsible and, you know, fulfill this Taurean image. It was the extent to which I tried to fulfill that image, was the extent to which the equal but opposite tension of trying to escape that image, you could say, into the Scorpionic seventh house territory kept pulling at me. So really the way that I've understood that period in my life upon a lot of reflection is not so much that there was one direction that I needed to go in and one direction that I needed to avoid, but rather that the more that you hunger after whatever the North Node represents, the more that the inevitable disappointments, losses, or desire to escape that very impulse will appear through the opposite node. And that's complicated. It's not an easy formula. It doesn't make for an easy, slick formula that you can plug in and like just easily, you know, blast through charts reading in that way. It's not, it's nuanced and it's challenging to wrap our head around how we can be polarized through the gains and desires of the North Node that are oftentimes a red herring and be equally polarized by the escapist tendencies of the South Node or the losses or hardships of the South Node that are oftentimes actually more beneficial to us than the thing we keep trying to embody or do or become or achieve in the North Node. So it's, I always say with these nodes, it's like those finger traps that you put your fingers in and you try to pull them out and they get tighter. The equal opposite pull of these two forces, Rahu and Ketu, they were both considered demons who sort of are like haunting us all the time. But it's by engaging with them through a spiritual practice over time that we come to understand and identify the impulses as two sides of the same coin, right? So the pull to be a responsible adult and to have no needs or, problematic desires to be self-sufficient, to be secure, like Taurus in the first, I've got this, I'm responsible, I'm easygoing, I'm an adult now, I'm look at me, you know, like it was like trying to project this image of like, sort of being self-possessed, right? It was a very Taurean thing and really desiring to be that and have that. And then the Scorpio South Node says, yeah, but there's something that there's something missing. There's something false about that. And you get pulled into this opposite direction. For me, you know, promiscuity, girlfriends breaking up with me, drug use, all of these things that were in the shadow of that Rahu North Node impulse. Ultimately, even though there was a lot more loss and hurt and sort of damage with the South Node, it was those experiences that started showing me the pointlessness of what I was, the image that I was trying to cultivate with Rahu in the first and Taurus, and that who I was did not need to fit the bill of that. And also that was what led me away from the church and started having me explore in other ways and other forms of faith and so forth. So the two areas are working on each other and they both have so much to provide simultaneously. It's never, ever a simple formula like South Node is the stuff you need to let go of, and North Node is the stuff you need to cultivate. It's just, and it was never really talked about that way up until very recently. So anyway, I hope that this is helpful. Let's talk just a little bit about this Scorpio South Node, wherever it may fall in your chart. You're talking about the domicile of Mars and the fall of the moon, a water sign. So, you know, the complex, heavy, difficult feelings like betrayal, lust, desire. You're talking about the impulses toward deep, intense, penetrating emotional connections. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're destructive. The desire to go deep, nothing superficial. That these things with the South Node are going to there's going to be some losses and pain that are toned by these kinds of experiences, the heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching, deep, intense emotional turmoil. That kind of stuff is, you know, that's where we're going to experience some of the pain and losses, materially speaking, where things don't work or things hurt, but also the experiences that catalyze the spiritual awakening. And then simultaneously with the North Node of the moon, the desire is going to be there. Venus, it's the domicile of Venus. It's the exaltation of the moon. It's earthiness. So, you know, we're also going to be tempted along by the desires of Rahu in Taurus, the image of I'm secure, I'm confident. I'm, you know, exactly what I was talking about, for example, when I was, you know, 22 years old or something. So, you know, especially things that look stable, beautiful, nice, simple, reliable, trustworthy, golden, you know, kind of exalted apple pie, you know, kinds of images. There's going to be an impulse to try to embody or go toward those things. It's not necessarily a bad impulse, but don't be fooled into thinking that if I just go toward these nice Taurian, you know, Venus moon images, all lovely, you know, all stable, all happy, all comfortable, all easy, all secure. You know, there is a secret lust in that right now that you have to be really careful of. None of those results last forever in the material world, and none of those results will deliver happiness any more than any other image of the zodiac. They're just images, right? Who we are was never born and will never die and will ride through in this material world so many different experiences and impulses and seasons and desires and devastations. And so we have to be really careful right now, because there's going to be a lot of growth in those Taurian areas, right? There's things that, like, I remember when I was, you know, young, and this was going out, like, I had credit cards for the first time and I was paying them off. I had a salaried job. I had my own car. I had my own apartment. It was all like, and I felt so, you know, just, I don't know, like coming, you know, like, oh, this is all like, I'm in it. You know, I've got it all figured out. I have this beautiful sense of, you know, self that was coming along. Not that all of that was bad, right? But how much of that was just, you know, were so much of that that I ended up realizing was not who I was. You know what I mean? So much of those images that were temptations and illusions. You have to be really careful of that with Rahu, because Rahu will present the image of the golden thing that will solve your problems. That's, in my opinion, one of the reasons why it's so appealing to talk about Rahu or the North Node as your evolutionary homework, because Rahu North Node is like one of the ultimate temptations. Doesn't this thing look like the answer to your problems? Right? But it's not. It's really not. No, it might be something that you need to develop, pursue, like all desires. Desires are our teachers. So you can pursue the Taurian archetype, solidity, peace, beauty, harmony, you know, kind of fecund, virile, you know, strong, beautiful, confident, peaceful. These qualities can grow within you, and the desire to cultivate them is there. But don't think that these don't come with problems, secret shadows that are the, there's always something being rejected in what's being selected, right? And that's why the axis goes together, and collectively these impulses, the Taurian gains and the Scorpionic losses, the material gained by through Taurus, the spiritual realized through Scorpio, those things that are going to be happening are coming together and collectively are teaching us about the nature of karma itself. People think that it's about burning off karma. No, it's impossible. You can't, even the ancient yogic sages tell us, you can't burn off karma, right? Like people are saying, I'm burning through karma. Karma is described as anadi, which means without origin, without beginning, without end. It's like, you know, karma is like fish in water. We're fish, we're in water. Karma is the water we're swimming in. You can't burn it off. You're in it, right? So what we're talking about ultimately in the enlightenment traditions of the ancient world is about changing your consciousness so that eventually you no longer take birth in the karmic world. Now, you may or may not be interested in that at home, right? Right now. And I can say that most days I'm not. I mean, if I'm interested, I'm really invested in the material world. But the point still is that you can't burn off karma. It's not like you burn off karma and then you're enlightened. No, you transition your consciousness to desiring being in the karmic world to going to the spiritual world. That's a simple summary. And so this idea that through successive lifetimes, I'm burning off karma is a myth. It's literally a fiction. Like, that's not how it works, even within the yogic philosophy. So you can, you know, when we say burn off karma, what we really mean is changing patterns. We're talking about patterns that are just mutating, evolving, and changing. But within the karmic world, they don't change to become more or less karmic. They just change karmically. One pattern of karma changes into another pattern of karma endlessly, as long as we value being plugged into the karmic circuit. Once we don't value being plugged into the karmic circuit, then any experience, every experience becomes part of how we make that transition in consciousness out of the realm of karma. But otherwise, it's like, well, good luck burning up karma. There's an unlimited supply of it because karma itself is an energy that is eternal. Right? So the material world, the material energy, this too is a divine energy. It's not, you know what I mean? And there's an endless supply of it. So it's about where we want to be as souls and what we want to be in a relationship with. You can't burn off a karma like it's an accumulated amount of experiences and you're just shedding it or something like that. No, it's like slowly realizing all karma is essentially the same thing. It's just ones and zeros organized in different ways. It's karma is just a bunch of different cause and effect sequences that ultimately lead to the same thing, which is frustration, impermanence, and suffering, as so long as you keep engaging in it. So no matter what we're doing, you just think, oh, I'm going to go to the North Node and try to, you know, and then I'll level up if I follow it. No, the desires will only lead you down a path of further desires because they're karmic. They're all karmic. So just like any transit is karmic, just like everything in the birth chart is karmic, we are not karma. So when the more we start to realize that, the more that anything, whether it's the nodes of the moon or a planet or an outer planet or traditional planet or eclipses or whatever, they all become part of how we start seeing the eternal and making that shift of consciousness in terms of what energy we want to associate with. Thank you, karmic world. This has been really interesting. I'm going to go check out some spiritual worlds. That's the gist of what ancient Hermeticists were talking about, Platonists were talking about, yogis were talking about in philosophy. That's what Buddhists are talking about. But so that's why I'm saying overall today, I wanted to encourage everybody to think about this, not so much in terms of like, oh, I've got to go do this and that, I'm burning off some karma over here. And it's a dyad that comes to teach us about things we desire and what lives in the shadow of what we desire. And the two will be in this very dynamic conversation with one another, you know, between now and all the way into the spring of 2023. So I hope that this has been useful. We will talk more about these impulses and how they play out in the houses a little bit further down the road. Closer to the date of the nodes changing signs, we'll take a look at that and make sure that we take it through and I'll probably pull some tarot cards for that too. I think that might be fun. So at any rate, fun, spacey exploration of the nodes today. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please leave me your comments in the comment section. I would love to hear from you guys with the hashtag grabbed and use Scorpio Taurus, September 2012 to March 2014, or Scorpio Taurus, May 2003 to November 2004. What were you going through? How do you see the tension of these different pulls expressing themselves in your life during those times? How are you already noticing them showing up now? I'd like to gather some stories for an episode at some point, so please do use that hashtag grabbed. And tomorrow we'll probably be getting started. I think we're going to take a look at the eclipse on Saturday again, the solar eclipse in Sagittarius. In the meantime, don't forget my Kickstarter is still flying along. Please pitch in if you can. Link is in the comment section or the description of this video. And I thank you so much for your support. And we'll see you again tomorrow. Bye.